was once trapped inside is now freer to float around. They are typically harmless, but you should check with your eye doctor if you notice new floaters, especially if they appear after a flash of light, or if you should notice a curtaining effect of your side vision. Otherwise, that squiggly critter you see, especially when you look at a blue sky or a white background, is probably with you for life and should simply be ignored. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on eye care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor.
Leaders from 16 Latin American and Caribbean nations gather in Cuba today for the annual Petrocaribe Oil Summit. The central figure of past meetings, 81-year-old Fidel Castro, will be replaced there by his brother Raul. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez is expected to take a leading role. Circuit City posting an unexpected third-quarter loss from lower sales and price cuts on flat-panel televisions, causing the company's stock to drop 29%. That's a fourth-quarter loss could also be indicated after their biggest earnings decline in 5 years. Next week, Blockbuster will raise prices for its DVD-by-mail service by as much as 40%. Shares of its rival Netflix jumped more than 9% at that news. FedEx reporting lower quarterly profit. Company officials say higher fuel costs and weak U.S. economic growth are to blame for that. Alitalia's board of directors is advising Italian government officials to accept an offer from Air France KLM to help the nearly bankrupt airline with an input of 6.5 billion euros. Lightsweet crude oil trading at $93.31 a barrel at this week's close of Wall Street, the Dow up 205 points at 13,450, NASDAQ up 51 points at 2691, the S&P 500 also up 24 points at 1484. Always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Six minutes past the hour on this Friday, the 21st of December, 2007. An aching year goes stumbling toward its close and its merciful end. Oh, boy, that's optimistic. Yeah, you're just a little ray of sunshine tonight, Bob Kincaid. Shoot me. I guess all is not bad news this evening. There's some very good news for some people. It's going to be a very, very merry Christmas for Goldman Sachs Chairman and CEO Lloyd Blankfein. Christmas bonuses went out today at Goldman Sachs. In the little envelope with the Christmas card in it, Lloyd Blankfein found a check for $68 million. What does any human being do on Earth that is worth $68 million? I mean, not jealousy. Don't care. Wouldn't want $68 million. But what can any human being on Earth do that warrants not a salary of $68 million, but a Christmas bonus of $68 million? million dollars. He got $26.8 million in cash and $41.1 million in restricted stock and stock options. That just takes the $54 million recent record that he set last year out and beats it to death behind the barn. Just astonishing. And, you know, did I miss something? Did I not get the memo? Was this not exactly something that you would ordinarily call a banner year on Wall Street? I mean, it looks to me like the guy showed up. He showed up, and he got $68 million in the way of a Christmas bonus. You tell me. We'll open the phones. This is the last time we'll be together for a few days. We won't be back, oh, until Wednesday evening. You tell me. What is it that a human being can do that's worth $68 million? Now, okay, back up. Let's put some parameters on this. Let's say that you invent a way to make vehicles go on air, and you start selling those vehicles. Well, you know what? If you made $68 million, you're probably going to make a few billion, all right? And I'm all for that, because you've done something. What has this guy done? I mean, it's not even real money anymore. It's bits and bytes on a computer. It's packet passing. It's on one computer here, then it goes to another computer there, and, you know, there's no there. So you tell me. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you need us to pay the freight, if you've got your own unlimited long-distance dialing plan, then it's 304-658-5453. Easy, easy, easy. You tell me, what is there in this world that's worth $68 million Christmas bonus? Just the Christmas bonus. It's another one of those Richard Corey moments. You know, every time I see these guys, I think of that poem by Edward Arlington Robinson. Read it a few nights ago, Richard Corey. Honestly, what does he do? I respect accountants. Somebody's got to keep an eye on the books, especially in the sort of a world where book cooking is not so much a crime as it is a cost of doing business. What is it about this man's accounting skills that make him worth $68 million? Let's go ahead and take the inquiry a little bit further. What is it? Is there something wrong with a country that says a $68 million Christmas bonus is okay? But, you know, this is just that story. There's going to be, it's that time of year. There'll be humongous, obscene Christmas bonuses for the head man at Snake Farm Insurance. And, of course, he'll get that money largely as a function of continuing to screw over policyholders in Mississippi, Louisiana, places that were affected, Alabama, places that were affected by Katrina, Rita, that sort of thing. Allstate Insurance's CEO will get a handsome multi-million dollar Christmas bonus. And I guess it's clear that this is a question from the plebeian class, because for the life of me, I can't think what I would personally do with $68 million. Now, to be honest, I could probably get to $10 million. I could burn up $10 million in a hurry, probably. You know, fancy schmancy house, fancy schmancy cars, maybe a jet, a pilot to fly it. I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, the big ticket stuff. Pay for the kids' college and the grandkids' college, you know, set up a foundation. And maybe that's what he'll do. Maybe this is absolutely unwarranted. Maybe all of that $68 million is going to go to charity. And blessings on him if it does. But you see a headline like that and you just sort of, what? Other headline, Chrysler CEO, we're operationally bankrupt. Wow. Just wow. And, you know, this is going to be kind of a laid-back program this evening. I'm not particularly on fire about anything. Let's see. Last year's bonuses on Wall Street. Again, for people who, you know, don't really do anything. I mean, I'm sorry. They just don't. They shuffle money. And they don't even shuffle money anymore. They just sit there and give the orders to somebody who punches a keyboard. $23.9 billion was the Christmas bonus level on Wall Street. That means an average of $136,000 per employee. Oof. You know, when you've got that kind of scratch, does it like give you ulcers and you know, early heart attacks and stuff like that? I'm guessing no. No. Don't think so. So, you know, you can't, if you're like me, you can't look at a headline like that and not just sort of slow down and take a peek at it like you're driving slowly by a train wreck. Headline, teach yourself judo with Putin. And after you've gotten your 13th degree black belt, you can move on to learn poisoning. Nice guy, that. Oh, you know, but it's the Christmas season, so, you know, let's maybe we'll try to keep it on the upscale. Nah. So, you know, that's a starting place. Here's another starting place. Little story about a study, and it's wow. And it really does sort of dovetail in a sad little way with the $68 million bonus story. If you don't have insurance, don't get cancer, because it is a sure enough death sentence being uninsured with cancer. One would think that this would be, yeah, sort of a no-brainer, but they actually studied it and did research on it. The American Cancer Society did. Uninsured cancer patients are nearly twice as likely to die within 5 years of the diagnosis as those with private coverage. It's the first national study actually examining the issue. The Associated Press story says that people without health insurance are less likely to get recommended cancer screening tests. It also says that when the patients finally do get diagnosed, it's usually too late and the cancer has already taken off and started running hellishly around their body. Mm-hmm. What would $68 million do toward the uninsured? Oh, well, nothing, Bob. You know, it's a multi-billion dollar thing. I mean, $68 million is just a drop in the bucket. But it is, in fact, a drop in the bucket. How much tax do you reckon this fella's going to pay on $68 million? probably next to nothing. He's probably taxed at a lower rate than any of us sitting here together tonight. Sort of reminiscent of what Warren Buffett said, that he pays taxes in a lower bracket than his secretary does. Uninsured. It's an innocuous little word, uninsured. But when it gets a human face, it gets a lot more difficult. When uninsured actually means a man named Edward Hicks in Florida, you begin to appreciate the import of the study. Mr. Hicks's wife, Peggy Hicks, was asked about it. She said, "I'd just like for something to be done to help someone else so they don't have to go through what we went through." Mr. Hicks died in August from colon cancer, which, if caught early, is largely preventable. She said, "He was so ill, and you're trying to get him help, and you can't. You can't." Mrs. Hicks is 67 years old. Cancer Society's medical journals called, oddly enough, cancer. That's where the study's being published. Dr. Elmer Huerta is the president. He said, "The truth is that our national reluctance to face these facts is condemning thousands of people to die from cancer each year." It's hard to come by the actual numbers that relate insurance status and cancer deaths, because death certificates don't say whether those who died were insured. Maybe that's something we need to do on a national basis. Maybe we need to start putting insurance status on the death certificates, so that then we can take those numbers and we can hold them up boldly and brightly in front of the crowd that screams "socialized medicine" every time we mention the idea that being able to go to the doctor when you're sick, or more importantly, really, in light of this study, being able to go to the doctor when you're not, so that the free marketeers and the supply-siders can actually see the consequences of their hateful black-heartedness. The Associated Press says that it estimates, based on hospital cancer deaths in 2005 gathered by the U.S. Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, that at least 20,000 of the nation's 560,000 annual cancer deaths are uninsured when they die. Experts said the estimate sounds reasonable. This sort of highlights the need for preventive care and for screening for all types of cancer. But there are things that you can't get screened for without some rather significant medical procedures. Now, there have been some advances here and there, but it's still a fairly involved day out of your life to get screened for colon cancer, because that's still a colonoscopy for the most part. I'm told that mammograms are no joy. But you know what? That day that you take for the colonoscopy, the rather awkward feeling most men have getting their prostates checked, the "I am certain of it" discomfort and sort of ick factor of, I'm basing this on things that Agnes has said in the past, on getting up in the stirrups for a pap smear, all pale in comparison with what comes after the hell of not checking. But here in the home of the free, in the land of the brave, land of the free, home of the brave, something, we don't have time for considering that the people of the United States actually deserve, not need, but damned well deserve, to be able to continue their lives. That the life of a 67-year-old woman who has devoted her life to her husband, and that they hope to grow old together with some level of dignity, but she loses him because she can't get him health care, and she can't get him checked, and she can't get him treated. You see, we make an assumption when we talk about things like that. It's not even an assumption, it's a statement. It's something we tell the world. We tell the world that Mr. and Mrs. Hicks are not, well, they're just not as American as Lloyd Blankfein at Goldman Sachs. In fact, it's not just that they're just not as American, they're just not as human. $68 million Christmas bonus. And a man who dies for want of basic medical care. Basic, you know, not palliative, not treatment, but preventive medical care. Save so much with preventive medical care. It's one of your best medical bargains out there. But we're not interested in bargains. We're interested in making sure that, well, we can't run around paying for everybody's health care. Goodness gracious. The free market will solve the health care crisis. Well, it hasn't even made an attempt thus far. Because the free market is perfectly happy with the money it's making. Thank you very much. So Mr. Hicks can go die. And many thousands of others just like him. Twice as likely people are, after being diagnosed with cancer, twice as likely to die within the next 5 years when they're uninsured and have to go begging for whatever treatment they can get as those who are insured. Of course, those who are insured also have profound copays that can wind up causing them to lose their house, and they have no, but you know, they have no remedy under the reform of the bankruptcy laws of this nation. Let's all stand up and sing a Christmas carol, huh? Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
Susan. Just to add a little bit of cheer, shall we say?
Don't cheer me up too much, or I'll be in the bottle before the show's over.
On this 21st day of December 2007, the House passed the Terrorism Risk Insurance Revision and Extension Act, which, and this is a direct quote, would help the insurance industry cover costs in the event of a terrorist attack.
Oh wait, we're reinsuring the insurance industry. Well, Merry Christmas, Susan. So in other words, the Congress has taken positive steps to make sure that the insurance industry is protected if they actually have to pay claims like they contractually obligate themselves to do. Do I have it right?
More or less. I don't know any. I can't think other than these hedge fund managers. I can't think of any industry that is more bloated with cash.
Yeah. Oh. Sure.
I mean, geez, they're like overfed leeches. You poke them and the blood spurts out.
Oh, you're getting a little too charming now, Susan.
Oh, I'm rather pissed.
But, I don't know, you know, we talk and we take it for granted that every American deserves to be able to go to the doctor and get checked out and make sure that they don't have this. And they, you know, we live in a poisoned world. I've never seen any studies that actually sort of try to look at the number of diseases that are caused by external influences. you know, smoking, drinking, too much fat in the diet, but also mercury that precipitates out of the air, the nuclear fallout from coal-fired power plants, things like that. But so, you know, if we're going to ask Americans to live in this toxic environment, couldn't we at least have the common decency to help them sort of keep an eye on their health for when it starts to, you know, rot them at their cell structure? I mean, is that just out? Am I out of my mind?
No, I wish you weren't. Yeah, I'm technically insured through the subsidized insurance. The thing is, you know, you mentioned copays. I may as well not be insured at all. I can't afford the copay.
Not surprising. Not surprising at all.
So I don't go in for tests that I know I should have because I can't afford the copay.
And they get kind of persnickety about those copays, don't they?
Oh, yeah. They get downright pissy about them. So, you know, God bless us, everyone. You know, we're going right back to the days of Bob Cratchit and his little boy who was dying because he couldn't get medical care.
Yeah, very few people, it's interesting you should mention that, Susan. I was thinking about it the other day. Very few people look at Dickens as A Christmas Tale and recognize it for what it was.
It was a cautionary tale.
No, it wasn't. Well, okay, I mean, it was actually a criticism of an extant, a society that already existed.
Yeah.
So much of Dickens's work was, because Dickens looked around at the England of his day and realized that it was appalling.
Yeah, but it was also a cautionary tale in that Dickens also knew if you let it continue, then you would get the English equivalent of the French Revolution.
Yeah.
Now the English smartened up and said, yeah, well, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. But are we going to smarten up?
Not if the Repiglicans have anything to do with it.
Good question. And not if the Dinos have anything to do with it, too.
Well, the Dinos have been, yeah. So,
It's like you said, you expect a snake to be a snake. Now, the Republicans, you expect this.
But it's a little harder to stomach when it's the people that you put into office to specifically deal with this issue.
Exactly.
I don't know what the new year's going to bring. You know, the 21st, so 10... we're less than 2 weeks away from the Iowa caucus. It's either the Iowa carcasses or the Iowa circuses. I'm not sure which.
Yeah.
But, you know, so we'll hear, I guess we'll hear a lot of talk. We will hear a whole bunch of talk, and talk is cheap?
Very cheap.
Dirt cheap. We'll hear a lot of it between now and November. And, you know, I don't want anybody to go, you know, run a warm bath and get out the little treat single-sided razor blades or anything. But I've got a very pessimistic outlook on where America's headed. We passed a little mark now with this latest rollover and scratch my belly military appropriation from the Democratic Congress. We've passed a sort of a hallmark now, Susan. I don't know if you noticed it or not, did you?
Not sure.
This war that began in March of 2003, as of this latest appropriation, is now officially more expensive than Vietnam.
Jesus Christ.
This war and this occupation has now officially cost the American people more than Vietnam did. And the sad fact about that is that One, there will be more of these appropriations, and two, we have not yet begun to calculate the true cost.
Yeah.
We don't have any idea what the long-term cost is to those soldiers that Tucker Carlson laughed at on Wednesday when he made such mocking sport of John Edwards' ad in Iowa.
Well, I agree with Stephanie Miller. Tucker Carlson is nothing but a right-wing tool.
Oh, yeah, you could just call him the craftsman because he's a tool.
Yeah. She called him that to his face on TV. There's YouTube of it, by the way, if you want to see it. It's classic.
I have seen it, and it is. And, you know, it's like, well, it's reminiscent of when Jon Stewart went on what was then Crossfire.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't he refer to Tucker Carlson as a part of the male anatomy? As in, don't be a... Yeah, I think he did. But they are, and they're not going to stop being. And, you know, I really want to find some way, you know, bless Stephanie Miller's heart, because it's time to stop treating these people like they're normal or decent.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, why would I want anything to do with another person who calls themselves an American, who doesn't think enough of his fellow Americans to want to make sure that they don't die? I mean, everybody's going to die. No doubt about it. Today, tomorrow, someday, next year, next decade, next century, maybe. But why should I hold in any sort of good repute a so-called American who is willing to, with regard to health insurance and medical coverage, is willing to look at his fellow Americans and say, listen, I don't care if you die rotted up with a miserable disease and you die in the most horrific agony imaginable. What's that to me? I'm about the free market, baby. The free market.
Yeah.
You know, really, though, I mean, is that person your fellow American?
No.
That person your countryman?
No, that's why I will forever river Gunny Bob, because I remember one of Mark Levine's shows. He had a right winger on, and Gunny called in.
Oh, yeah, and chewed him up. I remember that.
And he called him a liar. Came right out and said, you are a liar. Well, which was true. But you see, nobody had been...
See, I love how that works out, though. You call one of these people who's obviously a liar. You call them a liar, and they go, see, you're just another one of those name-calling Democrats.
It's time we started calling a spade a spade. Good for you, Gunny.
Yep.
Anyway, my love to Agnes.
Absolutely. Thank you very kindly. I will pass it along to her.
And may the blessings, may you be touched with his noodly appendage frequently.
Every day. Every day.
Yes.
Ramen, Susan.
Ramen.
Bye now.
Night-night.
Oh, I think we're actively proselytizing for the Flying Spaghetti Monster now. Yeah, one of these days we're going to have to get the inventor of the flying spaghetti. Or well, he wouldn't be the inventor. He would be the prophet, the one to whom the truth was revealed. Yeah, we'll have to try to get him on the show at some point and talk about the growing phenomenon that is the flying spaghetti monster. One wonders if on a high holy day, one should always make sure that there's a plate of spaghetti and meatballs or something. I, for one, have asked for a pirate costume so that, you know, when we do Wednesday night prayer meeting, I can have my religious accoutrements on, my pirate garb. But this is the last show we will have before Christmas, so we'll have some readings and so forth in the course of the evening. As far as we entertained a little bit of discussion last night as to why Christmas is where Christmas is, when Christmas is, And once again, our good friend, the Internet's most brilliant satirist, Eugene Finnerman, has chimed in. He says, Christmas has not succumbed to marketing. It was conceived in marketing. And the distinction is quite significant and quite true. The very date, December 25th, was the choice of a 4th century focus group. All those togas and stuff. This is lovely. No one knows the actual date of Jesus' birth. In fact, we can only estimate the year sometime between 4 B.C. and 8 B.C. In the early 2nd century, in between persecutions, Christian scholars flaunted their erudition by mathematically and theologically calculating the specific date of Jesus' birth. Some of them concluded that Jesus was born in January, April, May, or June. There was a general consensus that he died in March or April. The Gospels did provide some basis for that deduction, based on the assumption some overeducated Greek Christians felt that there should be a mathematical formulaic congruity. Woo, run to the dictionary, baby. Mathematical formulaic congruity in Jesus' life. In their calculations, if Jesus died in March or April, he must have been born in December or January. Says Eugene, I can't follow that logic. It's a Greek thing. The idea of a December birth may have been intellectually absurd, yet it was very practical. Late December was a traditional time of celebration in the ancient world. Pagans celebrated the winter solstice and the Saturnalia. December 25th was honored as the day of the invincible sun. And until the early 4th century, the church was subject to periodic persecution. The faithful could mask their celebration of Jesus' birth amidst the pagan antics. Furthermore, the Christian minority would have the psychological crutch of having its own holiday, the same solace that Jews now find in Hanukkah. That Christian sense of inferiority ended with the conversion of the Emperor Constantine, AD 306 to 337, and his decided favoritism. Christianity was the new state religion, yet the majority of the empire's population, 75% or so, was still pagan. That was a lot of people to convert. Constantine's coercion made a certain impact, but the church also relied on its gift for marketing. The celebration of Christmas on December 25th helped win the more extroverted pagans who were fond of their winter solstice parties. Hey, who said that Christianity isn't fun? You can have eternal salvation and a birthday party for the Savior. And since then, the official policy has been to celebrate December 25th as Jesus' birthday. And I'm going to let a little cat out of the bag. I used to really, really, really enjoy Christmas. Loved it. All the claptrap and the caroling and the wassailing and the, you know, the fun stuff. And the, you know, the just the baking and the cooking and the mingling and the socializing. Brilliant, good fun. And it wasn't my delving into, you know, wicked knowledge of facts that took that away from me. It was the fundies. Because long before John Gibson or Bill O'Reilly or the American Family Association picked up on the war on Christmas and, you know, sort of openly declared it, it was going on a little more quietly, a little more small scale. Jesus is the reason for the season. And I'm a contrarian. I'm cranky. I admit it. And I'm so anti-authoritarian that I am prone to do whatever the... You know, I mean, I'm an easy psychological read. You tell me to do it, and I'll find a way to do the opposite. Because I just don't be... And that included Christmas. You must celebrate Christmas. And you got to call it Christmas. You can't tell people happy holidays. Well, the minute that came out, I started telling people happy holidays. Because I'm not going to be shoved around by a bunch of religious thugs. Ever. At all. Blame me? And it really, really took a lot of the starch and the joy out of the holiday for me. And I'll be honest, tough Christmas. Last year was a tough Christmas, too. just for the things that have gone on in this little family. But I think it's in the nature of human beings to want some sort of a year-end break, to need it, and the natural cycles of the Earth turning on its axis and spinning through space and wobbling on that axis too makes the solstices and the equinoxes sort of natural times when you would have some sort of a celebration. And Christianity at one time or another pretty much cobbled together a holiday to put on every on top of every one of those that had pre-existing ones. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. But the fact of the matter is, it often feels to me, and I've been doing a lot of thinking about this, because to be quite honest, I got this quote today that I found bothersome, troubling, sort of made me sit back and think about things. And what it says is, the opposite of the religious fanatic is not the fanatical atheist, but the gentle cynic who cares not whether there is a God or not. I don't know that I find that logically true, but the idea that as I wrote to the person who sent it to me, I said, well, at least you can't accuse me of being gentle. A person who doesn't care whether there's a God or not is not a cynic. Simply an agnostic. Because if I care whether there's a God or not, then all of a sudden I'm going to have to start caring about, you know, who believes what. And if I start caring about who believes what, next thing you know, you're up to your eyeballs in pogrom and persecutions and inquisitions. And that's never proven to be any good for humanity whatsoever. I've never met, for that matter, a fanatical atheist. One of the favorite things that the religion industrialists like to say is, well, they're just as fundamentalist as any Christian. No, they're not. How can you fanatically not believe in something? Does that mean when you say you don't believe in it, you have to go, and I mean, I really, really, really don't. I don't just not believe it in a little bit. Because not believing in it, there's no degree. So I've been doing a lot of thinking all day. A lot of thinking indeed. And I started thinking a little bit about what Christmas means. And about why it is or is not something worth celebrating. Oh, by the way, just in case you were wondering, last night on the horn section, I passed along the fact that Dear Leader took a stand in the war on Christmas. He began his press conference yesterday by wishing everyone in the White House briefing room a happy holidays. Must have caused weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth at the focus on the family and such like. Rending of garments and tearing of hair and sitting in sackcloth and ashes. But he's a man of God. He said Jesus was his favorite philosopher, but he said happy holidays. Oh, we're doomed. Well, it only gets worse. I give you Her Excellency the Secretary of State of the United States of America. And this isn't something old. This is brand new. At the close of her briefing, in which she sort of lambasted Brother Mac Hoekstraby, oh, she did something evil. She did something utterly bad. Here it is.
Madam Secretary, Mike Huckabee recently said that this administration has a go-it-alone foreign policy. that it has an arrogant bunker mentality that has hurt America around the world. And we also just recently heard from John Bolton, who said that the Bush administration's foreign policy is in a free fall, and it's because the president has been listening to you too much. So I would just like to give you the opportunity. What do you make of this?
Look, I don't comment on other people's comments. I don't have time. All right, I really don't have time to worry about this. Let me just tell you what I think of where we stand in.
That means that if looks could kill, Bolton would go away in a basket. Okay, let's be square.
America's policy. We have right now probably the strongest transatlantic relations interactions that we've had, certainly during this administration, and I would say in a very long time. If you look at the relationship with France, which is being put to good use in Lebanon, the kind of interaction the president had with President Sarkozy when he came here, if you look at the relationship between Angela Merkel's government, and it's not just the chancellor. It is the relationship I have with Frank-Walter Steinmeier or the relationship that I have with Bernard Kouchner. You know, the British, it's always been a solid relationship. We go to NATO. We solve problems together. We've got NATO fighting in Afghanistan. The idea that somehow this is a go-it-alone policy is just simply ludicrous. And one would only have to be not observing the facts, let me say that, to say that this is now a go-it-alone foreign policy. And so I would just say to people, look at the facts.
Okay. We'll look at the facts, Madam Secretary. We'll look at the facts. But that doesn't cover all of that cannot possibly begin to cover for the... For the abject, utter duplicity of her final comment, where she sunk a knife into this Christian nation.
Thank you. Happy holidays, everybody.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that? Happy holidays, everybody. Just like Dr. Bach said last night, she has atheized Christmas. Condoleezza Rice has atheized Christmas. She's politically correct. She has told people to have happy holidays when, in fact, she knows she should have said Merry Christmas. What is this nation coming to? What has become of our moral fiber? Never mind the fact that, you know, you're twice as likely to actually die from cancer if you get cancer and you don't have insurance. Never mind that. It's un-American not to say Merry Christmas. And I'm tired of having to put up with the people, the un-American people, like George Bush and Condoleezza Rice, who atheize Christmas and don't have the common decency to acknowledge the Christian heritage of this nation by the simple act of wishing people a Merry Christmas. Sick, sick people. Bad people. So I tell you what, I'm not going to play a bunch of, you know, ho-ho jingle bells music or anything, but I do have some stuff. This is stuff that I actually, I don't know, I mean, there's no Christmas lyrics or anything. I just love this, and I listen to it this time of year in lieu of having to listen to the Moron Tab and Apple Choir singing Silver Bells or something like that. So we'll be back after a little bit of music and the news, and we'll have at it again. You know how to reach the program. It's via the phone, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-5453. Email rolls in to bob@headonradio.com. This stuff's just pretty. Have a listen.
This is the Quality News Network. With billions of dollars in new defense funding on the way from Congress, Secretary of Defense Robert Gates is expressing hope that fewer U.S. troops would be needed in Iraq next year if security across the war-torn country continues to improve. Congress is still legally in session, although most representatives left days ago for holiday recess. This morning, Virginia Senator Jim Webb opened and then closed the Senate floor in the first of several pro forma sessions to keep President Bush from naming controversial recess appointments without Senate confirmation over the holiday break. In Washington, D.C., White House attorneys flatly denied that CIA videotapes from 2002 contained any scenes of the torture of terror suspects. Also in today's court hearing, attorneys for one detainee being held at Guantanamo Bay asked for an investigation into the tape's destruction. In northwest Pakistan, at least 54 people were killed after a suicide bomber blew himself up inside a crowded mosque. The bomber was targeting a former interior minister. The city of Brussels, Belgium, is on a high alert today. City police saying they have thwarted an attempt by 14 Islamic militants to free an imprisoned Al-Qaeda suspect. They expect a Christmastime retaliatory attack. The Washington Post says enriched uranium has been discovered on North Korean aluminum tubing, even though Pyongyang has sworn it has shut down its nuclear weaponry program. U.S. officials are quoted as saying such tubes can be used for weapons fuel development. Also, in North Korea, a senior U.S. negotiator says it now appears Pyongyang will fail to meet its promised deadline for listing its nuclear programs. For months, North Korea has pledged full disclosure by the end of this year. In Chad, six French humanitarian aid workers arrested in an attempt to fly 103 Darfur refugee children to foster homes in France. They'll go on trial today. The Chad government accused the International Rescue Mission of child trafficking. And borders between European countries and nine mostly former Soviet bloc nations disappeared today. More than 400 million people can now travel between Estonia and Portugal all the way across Europe without showing a passport. You are listening to the Quality News Network. We'll check science right after this message.
Remember when the name on the door said it all? In today's world, it's the website that defines a company's image. For better or worse, a company's presence on the internet is a vital factor in how it keeps existing customers and attracts new clients. Byte Technology of Monterey is a leader in a new approach to web design. Byte designs a new site based on the mission, purpose, character, and indeed the energy of their clients. Byte is particularly successful in presenting their clients' name to the global internet community because they approach the design with a clear, defined process. By fully understanding the client's business, motivation, and operation, they are able to translate the company's critical values into the new website. In addition to original design, Byte works with clients to update their website to reflect changes in target markets, products and services, and the business climate. Byte Technology. See what they're about at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
In New York City, a federal judge has dismissed an airline industry challenge to the nation's first passenger bill of rights. The measure requires airlines to provide water, food, fresh air, and clean bathrooms for passengers stranded on the runway for more than 3 hours. American consumers spent more money than they earned last month, dropping the personal savings rate into a negative balance for the first time in 15 months, but lending a badly needed boost to the U.S. economy. The U.S. Commerce Department report also indicates that core inflation rose 0.2% for the month of November, when a 0.3% gain had been expected. Despite the tumble of investment bank stocks this year, Wall Street executives will receive a 14% increase in annual bonuses. The top four banks will give their managers as much as $30 billion extra in bonus checks. Circuit City posted an unexpected third-quarter loss from lower sales and price cuts on flat-panel televisions, causing the company's stock to drop 29%, their biggest earnings decline in 5 years. Light sweet crude oil trading at $93.31 a barrel, gold at $815.40 an ounce. At this week's close of Wall Street, the Dow up 205 points, NASDAQ up 51 points, S&P 500 up 24. There's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Okay, back at it. Welcome to the pre-Christmas edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Anything on your mind, you're welcome to chime in. You know, it's not just the pre-Christmas edition of Head On. It is, in fact, Front Porch Friday. And we can sort of all get together. It's a little chilly out on the front porch. But I'm sure with the help of that earthenware jug with the dried corn cob stopper in the top of it, we can probably warm things up just a wee little bit, don't you think? Sure, why not? So, you know, just that little reminder. I want to share something with you. Kind of off the beaten path, because it's not directly in the crosshairs of what we've been talking about so far with $68 million Christmas bonuses and people who are poor being handed a death sentence by virtue of us not having any sort of nationalized universal health care. No, it isn't, but in a way it is. Because it's those guys with the $68 million Christmas bonuses who have the power to actually affect national policy and affect change. This is with regard to the Democratic debate, so-called, in Iowa last week, hosted by the Des Moines Register. It is by Gore Vidal, who is a brilliant man, you know that. And the sad fact is that, you know, this is one of those things that floats around in our little bubble. You probably are going to read this, or would have read it, or you're going to hear it now. But a lot of the people who need to won't. Because, you know, did you know that Britney Spears' baby sister, the 16-year-old, is all knocked up? Yeah, I know. I know. Shocking, shocking, just shocking. I'm sure that Grammy Spears is already knitting booties. But that, of course, is why we won't hear about things like this. Gore Vidal writes, I don't know how many of you were as appalled as I was at the way that the presidential candidate Dennis Kucinich was totally erased from the last Democratic debate held in Iowa. This was a decision that was made, I can tell, jointly by the one-time voice of AIPAC, Mr. Blitzer, and at the same time the Des Moines Register, or whatever it's called, a paper of no consequence for the United States of America. Elements of right-wingism are keeping his voice from being heard, even though there are many millions of us, Kucinich is ahead of both Biden and Dodd in the national polls, out here who like to hear his voice. He is in the great tradition of the original People's Party of the 1880s. He is in the tradition of George Washington and of Thomas Jefferson, and to silence him with a bunch of political hacks who have made such a mess of our political system pretending these were the only voices who could talk as presidential candidates, is it because of their campaign budgets? Now I know, says Gore Vidal, as all of you know, that people can come in with millions of dollars like Romney and so on, and can buy time in Iowa and in the North Pole or wherever it is they're running. They can buy it, but to get an honest member of Congress speaking out for the people of the country is a great and rare thing. I have listened to many political debates in my lifetime, if I may pull rank, because I've been around longer than anybody else, and here is a voice not only against the war, but the entire course leading us to it. I haven't heard anybody who has ever listened to Kucinich who didn't say, oh yes, yes, what he says is true, but nobody will ever take him seriously. Well, of course, nobody will ever take him seriously because they won't let him on TV to stand side by side with the other candidates. Some of them attractive candidates, but whose roots are not as deep as his in what we may call American life. Dennis Kucinich was brought up in poverty, something the other candidates talk about, but he actually lived through. He has known poverty in the richest country on earth, a country that is constantly boasting, that seems to be out of control with self-love. Well, I say let's have less self-love and pay some attention to our serious critics. And he is one. And his is a voice that is showing us how to get to the exit from the box that we are all in. It is so typical for CNN, a lousy network, and whatever that awful newspaper is called. Do we want to listen to them at the close of a primary campaign in a key state? They have nothing to say of any interest, and so they eliminate any voice that might say something intelligent. I have never felt more ashamed being an American than when I saw how this debate was handled. Wow. Thank you, Gore Vidal. Thank you for being out there and typing a little truth here and there. Thank you for caring enough to take the time to write that. Let's see who's on the phone here. We will go one by one and see who we can bring on. Hi, who have I got?
Well, you've got David in Tennessee.
Well, David, thank you for calling. Welcome to the program.
Well, you know, there's going to be a big Jones factor here for a few days, so I thought I would get a lick or two in before we all went away to do other things.
I appreciate you doing so.
And then you read Gore Vidal, and Lord knows I am such, you know, that's a hot button the size of Dallas for me, because in my youth, the 20s, my 20s, not those 20s, my 20s.
I was going to say.
No, I'm not that old. I'm just...
Back before electricity.
Let me tell you about uphill both ways, Sonny, and that snow. Or was it the blinding sandstorms? I forget which. You know, I used to turn on just broadcast television in the old four-channel days, and there would be Gore Vidal and William F. Buckley Jr. Whacking away at each other with what was the little red-headed guy that was such a great moderator, interviewer?
Cabot?
I'm sorry?
Cabot?
Yes. Refereeing?
Yeah.
And that could happen like 7, 8, 10 times a year, and for those of us that, you know, gave a rap dropping, we'd be sitting there taking notes. I mean, well out of college, we'd be saying, oh, wow, Gore said that. Ooh, Buckley said the other. And then we'd talk about it later. Oh, gosh. Shall we compare and contrast to nowadays? No, we shan't. But,
do you think Jamie Spears' baby will be a boy or a girl?
I'm just, you know,
I know. If you could reach through the phone, you'd slap me right now.
No. I'm diverted to my own efforts toward comedy. When you said Granny Spears, you know, if she's knitting booties, then I'm a Chinese aviator, and I can't even fly.
I know.
But you put two wonderful points, and it's a fine, wonderful, long continuum between them. On the one hand, we got some SOB in New York City that just plaques keys for a living, and he's getting a $68 million bonus. That's bad enough. I worked for a company that had 2,000 employees, and at the end of the year, from 15 manufacturing locations, if by their own accounting, they would state that they had made like $10, $12, $14 million at the end of the year as a privately held, they were thrilled. The one guy sitting in an office on a corner looking out over, you know, an incredible vista, he gets $68 million. Well, that's on one end of the continuum. And on the other end of the continuum, we've got people that can't get a liver transplant out of an insurance company.
Yeah, I got that one in the stack, too. I did.
Can't get coverage for a husband that should never die from colon cancer. Almost always, that's a relatively slowly progressing situation. And you you can't really cure it. You can certainly stop it. You can intervene. You know, yes, a colonoscopy out of pocket's about $2,500 average around the nation, but, you know, it's a human life. And that fellow that couldn't afford it is worth as much as that stinker in New York City getting $68 million. But right in the middle of that continuum is that third point that in my life creates a straight line. Two, 3 nights ago, a young man that I detest, that is a total discredit to broadcast television, journalism, entertainment.
Oh, Tucker Carlson?
Oh, Lordy. What a piece of excrement. And he berated. He made fun of Mr. Edwards because Mr. Edwards had a Christmas message that said, as we enjoy our bountiful lives, if we have them, could we please take a look at the homeless of our nation, one of four. Now, I've got to do a little aside here. One out of four homeless is a veteran of some war. And then he went on to explain there are 40-some-odd million, whatever the good figure is, what, a fifth of the population doesn't have any insurance. Could we please think about that and work on it, as per Mr. Edwards? And Carlson says, oh, install some guilt. Bum me out at the holidays.
David, I tell you what, if you don't mind joining me while we do this, I ran this last night during the horn section, but I think it bears going over again for folks who might not have been tuned in. We're not archived up on the horn section yet anyway.
Well, it validates it. Do you agree? Am I too far off?
No, you're not, and I've got it right here. I've got it right here. Let's check it out.
I'm listening.
Not all of them. You haven't seen the John Edwards ad, have you? A Merry Christmas? I don't think so, Stephanie. People are suffering.
We call this the Scrooge ad?
Yes, we call this the Scrooge ad. This is John Edwards wishing you a very guilty Christmas. Here it is.
One out of every four homeless people on our streets is a veteran. 37 million Americans live in poverty. Who speaks for them? We do. This is the season of miracles, of faith and love. So let us promise together, you will never be forgotten again. We see you, we hear you, and we will speak for you. In America, the chance to build a better life is a promise made to each of us. And the obligation to keep it rests with us all.
I'm John Edwards, and I approve this message.
Now, before we go any further with Tucker, who, by the way, looks to be putting on a little weight.
Before even that, I've got to apologize for making a mistake. I thought Mr. Edwards was making... I thought he was making a statement about not having health coverage, and he was talking about poverty. So I screwed it up, but, you know, I'll accept my punishment.
Oh, well, you know, I don't think you did anything that's anywhere near what Tucker Carlson did. I'm not giving the guy free publicity, but no, this is about talking about someone when they are being what he's going to say in a couple of minutes, David, is and I don't mean to throw the word around so that we water down the meaning of it, but what he's about to say is evil.
Yes, it is.
It's just evil. Bum me out at Christmas. Oh my God. Well, here we go.
Again, no Christmas. He is a secular preacher. He's a Bible thumper with no Bible, this John Edwards guy.
That's
but
a great ad.
You think it is?
That's a great ad.
Boy, it depresses the hell out of me. I'm all for remembering the poor at Christmas, but that seems so political to me. One out of every four homeless is a veteran. What does that have to do with whether it is...
I've got my shoe off, David, and I'm about to put it through a window.
Well, yeah, get the Elvis gun. I got to shoot me a TV.
One out of four homeless is a veteran? What's that got to do with anything? It's got to do with everything.
It's got to do with everything. And the rest of this clip is, I don't want to step on what you're going to play next, but it is so damning.
I mean, I think of the poor at Christmas.
Well, yeah. As do I.
But no, Tucker Carlson, you know... It ain't about thinking about the poor at Christmas.
Yeah, he thinks about the poor at Christmas and then he forgets them.
Well, yeah, he thinks about them while he's walking by them.
Yeah, while he's hitting the open car button on his Lexus car key, or big BMW, or Mercedes.
Yeah, exactly. So, shall we see how he's going to get the other foot in his mouth with the first one?
Oh Lord, I wish it was the sharp object parallel to the two bones in his forearm, but.
Well, isn't it enough to be homeless? They have to be a veteran too. I mean, it's so relentlessly PC. It kind of makes you want to throw
facts
up.
Are troublesome things.
You want to get to the facts about homelessness?
No, I mean
it has to do with mental illness and drug addiction. That's the fact.
And a lot of people, like veterans, are
absolutely. But he's not talking about the facts. I mean, he's not willing to tell the truth about social problems, obviously.
Oh,
but
Miley, this is a Christmas ad. It's not a Christmas ad.
It's like
Christmas season is about being thankful for what you have and giving back to others.
But how dare you sit in your centrally heated house and enjoy yourself while homeless veterans languish on the streets.
That's not what he's saying.
You don't think so?
No, that's not what he's saying.
Are you worried about his 25,000 square foot house?
I am. I think, well, why does he let a few onto his squash court? You know what I mean? Just for Christmas.
Now, see, there, David, there's a thing there. I just brought up a man who got a $68 million Christmas bonus and made what I think is a fair inquiry. What in the world can a man possibly do that's worth $68 million in a Christmas bonus? But you see, on my part, that's class warfare. On the other hand, you take Tucker Carlson, and he says, you know, well, he's got a 25,000 square foot house. How can he possibly care about the poor?
Which, I'm sorry, I'm not always an advocate of trial lawyers, but Mr. Edwards, Senator Edwards, Candidate Edwards, earned that over roughly 18-year period as a functioning lawyer adhering to the statutes of the United States and the state in which he adjudicated or he was part of trial. I'm sorry. He did a lot more to earn that big-ass house in the middle of North Carolina with a big-ass fence and accoutrement that you and I might be able to read about in magazines the month after the magazine comes off the stand and some guy will give it to us as they haul it away. I mean, that's how far up the food chain he is, and he is layer upon layer below that guy that's getting $68 million. And what did you tell us? The guy that got the $68 million bonus got a $54 million bonus last year?
Yeah.
No, he is worth that. And the other thing about that Carlson bit that just, it has made me so crazy is this idea that Edwards had no facts. Well, yes, he had a widely distributed fax. One in four is a veteran. And then he says, it's about drug addiction and it's about insanity or mental problems. Well, duh. Are those things those men and women chose to have? No. The reason they have them is those veterans were treated badly by a short-sheeted VA that wouldn't do anything for them after they had defended their nation. What a frat boy asshole, Mr. Carlson.
Yes. And Beyond that, David, there's an idea that somehow, is it just me or was he excusing the ignoring of the homeless based on the fact that he perceives them all to be mentally ill drug addicts? I mean, that's an excuse just to, you know, what, are we at a place where we're just going to stack humans like cordwood?
The thing that I took away from that is the underlying thing, I believe, directly under the very thin surface that he put over it, is that, poor people usually are poor people. So they're just, you know, why should we bother? They don't have the resolve and the moxie to do anything better than that. And it strikes me as a perfect corollary. There is the situation stated by, Mother Babs, I dare not make a mess of my beautiful mind. And, oh, no, no, no. you homeless. Just get there. Don't bum my holiday.
It's working out quite nicely for them, really.
Yeah.
Oh, dear, I think I've forgotten my pearls.
They're in that big building, and they're on welfare anyway. Oh, my golly, they can see all their friends there.
They're just so easy to despise, aren't they, David?
Yes, and I do, happily. And sadly, unlike my mother told me, my hatred would not, you know, corrode my vessel. Thus far, I've remained in reasonably good health while hating people like Tucker and Bev and W and Prescott. Arg.
Arg, indeed.
Where's my pirate costume? I need me a noodly goodness headed my way.
Yarr!
All right, I'm out of the way. You've got a show to do. You weren't going to get excited. I might have done that. I hope I didn't. By golly, you know, it's like the guy that was being shown the Rorschach test by the psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist turned the page and he said, ooh, kinky sex. Turned the page, ooh, kinky sex. Ooh, kinky sex. Again came the reaction from the patient. And the doctor said, look, I'm not sure about you. And the patient said, you're the one showing me
the dirty pictures.
So I'm sorry.
He'll be here all week. Try the veal.
And you put $68 million for a bonus. And never mind he's getting $15 or $18 million just to clock in. And then on the other side of the thing, we got kids dying because the reluctance to grant it and the paperwork stopped her from having the kidney that was around the corner from her, maybe in the same hospital, and the nice man in Florida. You know, I'm in the same age bracket as that guy that died because there were black ugly things in his colon. I relate to that. So, but anyway.
The steel eel.
Okay, well, gee willikers. Yeah.
There's a happy Christmas thought.
Oh, I can forget about the light bulb doing its job. Let's not go too further up there, down there, over there, around there, making those 90-degree... Yeah, never mind. Well, anyway, and as John Lennon used to say, and so happy Christmas.
And so happy Christmas. Thank you, David.
Cheers, mate.
Bye.
See ya.
Rolling onward, let's see here. Let's see if we've got a person. Nope, no person there. No person there. Hey, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
I'm doing good, Jim. How about you?
Are you wearing pearls tonight?
No. That was Babs Bush.
Oh, I thought you were wearing jewelry tonight. I thought that'd be very interesting, as long as they're not faux pearls.
No. I'm holding out for a pirate costume.
You should do that. You know, going back to these Wall Street CEOs who are gaining all these bonuses, I know personally that stocks in those companies are down 46% per share earnings. And I can't see where any of these assholes have done anything to earn that kind of money.
Well, that was sort of my opening line of inquiry. He got more this year than he got last and underperformed. A ditch digger can't work on those terms, Jim.
Well, I know that. I mean, now, a couple of them turned down their options this year because they had gotten such a tremendous stock package last year. I mean, I don't know. It's just beyond me. And the economy is not doing that well. And I don't see how in the world these people can get away with that kind of stuff. I don't see a mind if a man makes a good salary, but my God, there are limits.
Yeah, there are. Yeah, there are. And frankly, let's be quite honest here. It's not because this guy is a money shuffler for Goldman Sachs. I feel the same way about a shortstop who, I don't care if he bats 402, hits 90 home runs and wins a gold glove. There's no such thing as a $30 million a year shortstop either.
Well, you know, and that's another thing, Bob. Why in the hell is the government getting into this crap with baseball on the 15th of January 2008 when they have much more demanding things on their time. Let baseball clean itself up. I could care less where they shoot up or do whatever they do. I could care less about what they do.
Jim,
why is the government getting involved in it?
I wore the hide off of the Republican Congress for this kind of foolishness. I'm certainly not going to lay off of them because they're Democrats. This
really?
Is stupidity.
I mean, if
you really want to see, if you want to see baseball clean itself up from its steroid mess, and frankly, as the occasional baseball watcher, I would. One thing's going to clean it up, and that is when some notable drops over stump dead. You know, I'm not talking about some fifth day rotation pitcher with a 9.2 ERA. I mean a Roger Clemens or a Barry Bonds or somebody like that. When they drop over stump dead because they've been juicing themselves, then baseball will look at itself.
Well, I think Barry Bonds would be dropping over, but not necessarily drop dead.
Yeah, well, but you'll be here all week too, try the veal.
Excuse me for being anti-sports, but I told you before, as far as all these sports like that are concerned, I feel about them the way Oscar Wilde felt about fox hunting, the unmentionable in pursuit of the inedible. And while you're having people being paid salaries like that who basically will be nothing more than just common laborers being that to me is just absolutely stupid.
I'd sure rather pay teachers, scientists, people,
doctors,
people who. You know what? I'd like to see something that. Oh boy, this just feels like heresy coming out of my mouth. I'd like to see something that Richard Nixon proposed.
Well, yeah, he proposed a lot of good things.
He proposed a minimum, not a minimum wage, but a minimum standard of living.
Yes, he did. He certainly did. I mean, there were a lot of things Dick Nixon did that were good. I mean, of course, the good is always interred with your bones, or the evil remains, as Shakespeare once said, and I paraphrase that. But, I mean, there were lots of good things that man did. He founded the EPA and other things as
but
well.
But, Jim, we're told that, you know, we can't do this because it's socialism. We can't do that because it would break the country. You know, but I have a halfway decent memory, and I remember when the Bush administration sent its flunkies to Congress, the Republican, you know, roll over and get scratched on the belly Congress. Not that it's much different from this one, but
yeah.
they sent their lackey to Congress, and the guy sat there, put his hand in the air, swore to tell the truth, and knowing full well that he was underplaying the number by about $200 billion, lied his ass off.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's typical behavior in those chambers. You know that. And, you know, it's just like, I don't know. I don't know how many of these guys are lawyers. And I tell you, I don't have a real high opinion of lawyers because I believe that basically when somebody's awarded a Juris Doctor, they're getting a license to rob, lie, cheat, and steal in many cases. Not all, but in some.
Well, that's what lawyers get. And when the MD degree is passed out, doctors get the right to bury their mistakes.
There you go, and a teacher, hell, when he gets his degree, they live forever.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's the way I felt about some of my luminaries that I called before I left, you know, before I stopped being a school mom. I mean, Jesus.
Can't
God,
you die?
I mean, you know, honestly and truly, it's the truth. I mean, doctors bury their mistakes, and sometimes the teachers live forever, but... You know, I just don't understand the inequity of some of this stuff, and I don't understand Edward's Christmas message. I mean, that thing can be taken several ways, you know?
Well,
I mean, if you would be concerned about the poor and the homeless and the veterans and people like that, it's a 365 a year thing. And it's just like FDR said, people eat every day, they sleep every night, just not once a year or whenever somebody wants their vote.
Well, that's the absolute truth, and the fact of the matter is, I actually have some faith that Senator Edwards will repeat that message at a time other than Christmas in light of the fact that he's been repeating it long before it.
Well, I'll give him that. And, you know, maybe he did win what he has by honesty and whatever. That's great. I'm not going to begrudge him his personal success as an attorney.
Well, I mean, I know a little bit about some of the cases he handled, and in large part it had to do with holding corporate thugs accountable for the harm that they caused.
Well, I think that's definitely to be commended.
I mean, one case, and you know, that's the thing about the legal system. Everybody wants to blame the plaintiff, Jim, but the fact of the matter is they wouldn't be there The plaintiff's lawyers wouldn't have the living they have if corporate America didn't dig its heels in and say, hell no, we won't until you've obtained a judgment, and we have appealed it, and we've finally been compelled to pay it. John Edwards represented the family of a little girl who was literally sucked down the drain of a swimming pool because the drain was improperly manufactured.
Yeah.
And yet he gets called an ambulance chaser for that. And George Bush talks about the family of that that little girl's bereaved family as being the winners of life's lottery.
He called it life's lottery.
Well, that's how he's talked about people who win medical malpractice cases and product liability cases. He says that they have won life's lottery. Now, here's a little SOB who was born on third thinking he hit a triple. But somebody who loses their baby sister, their precious little daughter, through a mistake in manufacturing that could have been avoided, and you take them to court, and suddenly you're beating up on we're beating up on the poor little corporations, standing there outside on the sidewalk, staring in through the frozen window panes at all the mean old plaintiffs inside. I don't buy it for a minute.
No, I don't either. I don't either. But I mean, it's just. I don't know. These corporations in America have just, ever since deregulation started and, the business climate in this country favors them over everybody else and at the expense of labor and at the expense of even the quality and the safety of the products that these people are putting on the market, they just don't seem to care.
No, because it's sort of like that little lecture on productivity that we got from David. What was it last night? As long as the numbers add up, who cares what the outcome is?
That's it. You got it. That's exactly right. They don't have to eat this stuff. They don't have to use it. Let somebody else buy it and use it.
You think the CEO of McDonald's has a Big Mac every day?
No, I think not.
Nor I. Nor I, by any stretch of the imagination.
No. I don't think he does either. But, I mean, it's just incredible how some of these people in the corporate world, as far as I'm concerned, are death merchants.
Well, yeah, they are. And the fact of the matter is, one of the things that we talk about when we talk about health care, and one of the in what Gore Vidal wrote, one of the reasons that any time Dennis Kucinich is absent from a discussion, regardless of whether you intend to vote for him or not, is he is the only one who is bringing up a very, very salient alternative where health care is concerned. Everybody has these hybridized plans, and I'm talking about the Democrats because the Republicans couldn't care less about insuring the uninsured in America. But the Democrats tend to have a hybridized plan that's, we're going to give you X money so you can buy yourself some private health insurance, blah, 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 blah. And the only person who stands up and says otherwise is Dennis Kucinich, who says we are going to continue to have this problem until such time as we remove the profit motive from Americans' health and well-being. He wants a not-for-profit health care system.
Well,
and it makes eminently good sense to me, Jim.
Well, I guess it would, yeah. I don't know how this has worked in other countries, but I mean, in some countries. But I think we're, number 18th in health care?
I think we're actually lower, Jim.
Well, I heard 18th a couple of years ago. And
like 37th, perhaps?
Maybe. Okay, and who's number one? Are the French still number one?
I don't know if it's the French. I would be surprised that if it wasn't, Sweden or
Scandinavian countries.
Yeah, because they seem to do the best. But beyond, the healthcare industry has become an industry that is dedicated not to, their whole raison d'etre is to not provide healthcare.
Well, yeah, or ration it. Yeah,
they have armies of lawyers whose entire job is not to provide coverage.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, they do. Yeah, they do. And I don't know. Well, as far as the corporations are concerned, I view those people in the same view that I would look at Al Capone. And I never forget one thing Al Capone said. When I give them the liquor, they call me a bootlegger. But when they serve it over on Lake Shore Drive, it's called hospitality.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I hope you can see what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know. Yeah, and it's in line with...
It's because of the hypocrisy of the whole thing.
Right. Steal a little and they call you a thief. Steal a lot and they call you a king.
That's it. Well, listen, I'm done here. I'm gone.
All right.
And you have a good evening.
You have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas, Jim.
Okay, thank you. We'll try.
All right. Bye now. Okay, let's see. Yeah, that's somebody. Hi, welcome to the program.
Sorry. I thought this was the front porch.
Well, it kind of is, but I can't tell who's on. I can't tell who's actually on a line, and I hate bringing beeping dial tones onto the air.
Oh, well, I'm not a beeping dial tone, Bob. I'm that.
Nope, nothing beeping about you.
No, I'm just that beeping guy that beeps a bunch about beeping, right? Good God, Bob. It's a silliness. If you can't remember what happened down in New Orleans just a little bit ago, just the other day.
Yesterday.
Yeah, it really was yesterday.
No, what really happened was yesterday. The people who were about to have their homes bulldozed.
I know that, Bob.
Were driven away with pepper spray.
No,
and tasers.
I'm not talking about that, Bob. I'm talking about yesterday when Katrina.
No, Bob.
What was that? Katrina.
Bob, don't lecture, okay? I mean, no, I understand that's what you're talking about.
See, that's the problem with most Americans. We're so absorbed in ourselves, Bob. I mean, I'm not absorbed in Bob Kincaid. Bob Kincaid he's a voice. He's just one voice. In a multitude of voices, but we are being drummed and drowned out by voices. By voices, they're coming from everywhere, and you can't hear yourself think for most of the time. You can't think about anything because you're hearing all these other voices coming from, Rush Limbaugh and what's this other one?
Oh, any of them, any of the filth merchants.
Just throw it out there, anything. You're standing in a room full of people, and they're all screaming, and they're all asking what's going on. And I'll tell you what's going on, Bob. We're being bamboozled. We're being twisted, we're being turned. We don't know.
Yeah, but Bob, it's actually even darker and more malicious than that. There is an actual genocide taking place on the middle class, because when you eliminate the middle class, you've committed genocide against it. And I don't mean taking people out and putting them in ovens or shooting them in trenches or anything. No, you're reducing them to the status of hopeless poverty.
That's right, Bob.
And that is the elimination of a social group, and it is a functional constructive equivalent of a genocide.
That is the truth, and the strangest thing is that they're standing still. We're all standing still while I do it, while they do it to us. We're just standing there and letting them do it to us. Now, Bob, I've said it 1,000 times, if I've said it once on this network, stand up and just say, I've had enough, okay? And I'm not going to go there with you. I'm just not going there. I'm not going to go with what this guy's name is.
Well, just say it. Never mind who.
No, well, I'm not. It doesn't matter who's saying.
No, it doesn't matter who's saying it. What is it that they're saying?
Well, okay. We are stuck, Bob, in this timeless loop. We keep hearing the same stuff. We hear about Katrina, but we don't suffer. We don't feel it. We don't feel like we're connected with our neighbors, with our friends, and the guy down the street. Or, he's,
well, we're not, Bob, because if we take time to make that connection, we might lose a day's work. When you're bailing water to keep your head out of it, it's awfully doggone hard to stop and get chatty. And trust me, it's designed that way.
I know that, but it's not that, Bob. We have to reach out guy next door, the guy that's losing his house. We talk about mountaintop removal many times on your show. We've discussed it. We have cussed it. We have gotten angry about it. But what the heck have we done about it, Bob?
Well, listen. You want to ask that question? I'm sure there are people who will be more than happy to give you an answer because I know them. What have we done about it? I know people that haven't been home for five consecutive days in 3 years because they stay on the road, going all over this country, telling people about it and motivating people about it. And
right.
I'm not gonna sit here for an instant and downplay in any way that effort because you know what? Because expecting to see immediate change is a little bit of a problem too.
No.
Because this is stuff that has to be built from the ground up. Grass roots have to have roots before they are grass.
I want to take you back to another place, a place that this country doesn't speak about very much, okay? You don't talk about the Vietnamese people. You don't speak about what happened in Vietnam. You don't even have it in your history book because it's not taught in this country about how the Vietnamese people, way back when in the 1960s, took on the power of the world and absolutely destroyed us in place because we kept occupying their country and they kept, you know, knocking us off in numbers until there was enough numbers, until you quit, Bob. Until you quit occupying their country, okay? Now, we're doing the same thing in Iraq, but nobody sees the numbers because they have been, how do you say that? You know, it's kind of one of those words that are used by the mainstream media, you know, it's just statistics, Bob. And so we are not going to publish statistics, right? We're not going to speak about them. We're not going to show
10 dead people is a tragedy. 10,000 is a statistic. I'm quite familiar.
That's the game, Bob. And, you know, I don't care about anything other than, this mythological person that existed 2,000 years ago, whatever, and we're celebrating the birthday of some mythological creature that may have or may not have been born on such and such a day, but we're going to have that holiday just shortly, Bob. But nobody speaks about the facts, and Bob, the one wonderful thing that I see in Bob Kincaid is that you usually work very diligently to bring out the facts. And that's all I ask for you, or from you, is to bring out the facts. I mean, you know, you can play games and talk statistics and all that, but just facts. You know, it's kind of like that old, what was that old?
Joe Friday.
That was, Joe Friday and, was that Dragnet?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, it's about time we drag a net over this planet and bring out some facts. This Christmas Eve, the only thing that I wish for the American people and anyone with half of a conscience is to drag out some facts about these boys and girls in Iraq that are suffering at your expense while you're over here lighting up your houses with lots of Christmas lights so you can look pretty in your neighborhood. I'm tired of this game, Bob. It's a game, and you know it is. So this joyous season, on this joyous season, reach down into your humanity and touch one person in New Orleans biological creature that exists in your mind, and you can reach into you and find in your heart love, hope, faith, and the biggest word of all, charity, Bob. Charity. On this day, this joyous day, in your whatever belief you have, find some charity for your neighbor and for your friend. And Bob, to you and Agnes and your children, I give you also faith, hope, love, and charity. But above all, I give you love.
Well, thank you, Bob. Thank you very kindly, and the very same back to you and yours.
But courage.
Yep, Kermit. We'll be talking to you the day after Christmas. So,
after Christmas, I'm going to be sitting.
stand tough. We will be back.
Taking over the goodness. Okay.
All right.
We'll see you later.
You take care, Bob.
Take care. Love you all. Bye bye.
Bye now. And, see, I hate it when that happens. This email just in. Healthcare's job. Their job is not to provide health nor preventative care. Their job is to create profit by dosing and cutting and putting people through the machine that goes bing. Should we have a single payer government backed healthcare system, our nation would have to care about our citizens. Should we screw over our citizens, then our government must pay for it. If the mining industry poisons 200,000 citizens, then our government, us damn it, must pay for the damage done by profit whores. Ooh, can't let the good of the nation get in the way of a company's profit. Now can we? No, 1,000 times. No. So we are approaching the top of the hour. News is on its way. We'll come out, and I've got a couple of things I want to do, and I'll let some thoughts sort of coalesce as they come bubbling out of my mouth. I try not to write this stuff down, not because I can't or because I'm too lazy to, but I like to see, you know, that's the purpose of these conversations. You're not scripting your calls. I'm not scripting my responses. And by not scripting, we actually might come at some naked, honest understanding. Okay? So, you know, that's where we are. The story that I'm looking at, and have been looking at all afternoon, I don't know how you begin to approach it. A 17-year-old girl who was denied a liver transplant by her health insurance company died Thursday night. Pacific time, 6 p.m., 9 p.m., just as we were wrapping up this program, Nataline Sarkeesian left this world at the UCLA Medical Center. Because of the liver transplant that she was denied, she had been in a vegetative state for weeks. Her mother's name is Hilda, and Hilda said she passed away, and the insurance company is responsible for this. They took my daughter away from me. That was Nataline's father, Krikor. Now, that family probably will sue, and if there is any justice in this world, she will prevail against Cigna Insurance. Doctors at UCLA determined that Nataline needed a transplant and sent a letter to Cigna Healthcare on December 11th. They denied payment for it, for the transplant. They reversed their decision just as Nataline was dying. You understand that the penny-pinching nature of for-profit health care was the writ of execution that put Nataline in the grave. It was. It just was. Because somewhere in Philadelphia or some other satellite office, somebody was promised a Christmas bonus that was commensurate with the amount of money that could be, quote-unquote, saved by the company. And the way they save money, save money, save cost, save everything but lives, the way they saved it was by looking at Nataline Sarkeesian and saying, we don't pay. Nataline was 17. She wasn't some old drunk with a rotten liver. She had leukemia. She could have lived. The company issued a statement. Our hearts go out to Nataline and her family as they endure this terrible ordeal. Cigna Healthcare, trademark registered, has decided to make an exception in this rare and unusual case, and we will provide coverage should she proceed with the requested liver transplant. Yesterday, about 150 teenagers and nurses protested outside Cigna's office in Glendale, California. It was only as the protesters rallied that the company reversed its decision. It would suit me just fine if this story was sufficient to utterly destroy Cigna forever, but it isn't, because one human being and the grief of one small family never can, here in the free market miracle, serve to bring ethical justice to a company that knows nothing of it. She had a 65% chance of survival of the transplant. She had a 0% chance of survival of the profit-driven insurance industry. You see, the president and CEO of Cigna, who I am sure somewhere around this time of year will be receiving a handsome bonus, probably not nearly as handsome as that of the CEO of Goldman Sachs, but handsome just the same. That man should be put on trial. He should be put on trial for murder. He should be given every advantage that the American legal system affords the criminally accused. To be honest, I'd like to see him defended by a public defender with a caseload of about 250 other cases so that he could experience real American criminal justice. But he should be tried. The second in command should be tried, all the way down to the claims adjuster who first issued the denial letter. They will be sued by the family, and the family should, if justice prevails, win a stunning verdict. But it will not serve to punish the criminal wrongdoing of these profit-motivated monsters. And monsters indeed they are. You see, Cigna argued in an email statement before Nataline died that there was a lack of medical evidence showing the procedure would work, despite the statement of the doctors that said she had a 65% chance of survival. Well, you see, they said in the accounting department at Cigna, you see, that means that there's a 35% that our money will just be thrown away. That is intentional criminal conduct. The CEO of Cigna should never know another day in which his view was not impeded by bars or razor wire ever, ever, ever again. A quick break, and we come back to finish the program, the final hour. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.